Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is propelling positive outcomes for families with special guest, Nicole Solomon. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. My name is Holly Raffel, the faculty director of the center, and I'm excited to welcome Nicole Solomon to the show. Nicole has served as the executive director for the Ohio Children's Trust Fund since 2022. Nicole joined the Trust Fund as a program manager in 2014, and since that time has served in many capacities. At the Trust Fund, she works closely with federal, state, and local partners to implement child abuse and neglect prevention programming. During her tenure, she has served as the project lead for multiple initiatives, including statewide triple P expansion, human trafficking prevention, as well as the Strengthening Families Framework Learning Networks, Enterprise Grants Management, and the Child Wellbeing Dashboard, to name a few. Prior to the Trust Fund, Nicole worked at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center for 7 years in program coordination for physician medical education program. She completed her Bachelor of Science in Healthcare Management, as well as her Master of Business Administration at The Ohio State University. This month, the center is focusing on healthy family environments, and I'm excited to share a conversation with Nicole on the most effective language, strategies, and resources for strengthening Ohio's families. Welcome, and thank you for joining us, Nicole.
Thank you, Dr. Raffel. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you all on today's podcast.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, and please call me Holly. To get us started, I invite you to tell our listeners more about you beyond your bio and what brought you to the role that you serve in today.
Yeah, so I think outside of my bio, it's important for listeners to know that I also speak through the perspective of being a parent myself. And especially as we're having this conversation today around effective language and how to make sure that we're really including language that's supportive of all families, I think through the lens of, what would I wish that I would have known ahead of time when I'm thinking through, challenging child behavior issues that we've encountered as a family ourselves, how I wish professionals would have talked to me when, I was going through, some challenges, and then thinking through, as a parent, how would I want to receive information if I was looking for services on my own behalf or on a family member's behalf? So I try to put myself in other shoes and really try to understand multiple perspectives. And that's something that I bring to this work with me on a daily basis. When I think about what brought me to the Ohio Children's Trust Fund in my transition to this field, it was about a decade ago, and I was debating a career change. And I wanted to be more involved in work that had a more direct impact on families. Through my education and my background in healthcare, I took a lot of classes around a public health approach and supporting our most vulnerable populations. And I've always had this innate driver wanting to serve in the people helping field. But I also wanted to bring this lens of, how do we make policy changes? How do we actually change our systems? And how do we have an impact on families at a bigger level? And so that was really what drove me to joining the Ohio Children's Trust Fund. And I really felt this calling to support, children and families prior to experiencing a crisis. And that's really what the whole mission of the Ohio Children's Trust Fund is all about.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I really appreciate you bringing in the personal and professional aspects of your journey that brought you to where you are today in your position. So some of our listeners out there may be new to the Ohio Children's Trust Fund. What is the Ohio Children's Trust Fund and what work do you support?
The Ohio Children's Trust Fund is a quasi-governmental entity, and we are housed within the newly created Ohio Department of Children and Youth. We also report to a 15-member board, which includes members of the state legislature. We have agency directors on our board, and we also have 8 public appointees who are appointed by Ohio's governor. In addition to serving as one of the governor's boards and commissions, We also serve as Ohio's Prevent Child Abuse America State Chapter, as well as the state lead agency for the Community-Based Child Abuse Prevention Grant. And through these designations, what we really do is we partner with agencies and organizations across the state to administer grants and programs throughout all of Ohio's 88 counties. And the services and supports that we're really focusing on are what we call those upstream services. And for those professionals who are used to talking about upstream and downstream, you'll know that we're really trying to reach families before coming to the attention of our children's services systems or any other kind of, more downstream services interventions. And so the programs and the services that we're funding at the Ohio Children's Trust Fund are things such as parent education programs. We have youth mentorship programs. We also have peer-to-peer parent support programs. But we also support things such as public awareness campaigns. We provide a ton of professional development and capacity building trainings. And really, what we're trying to ensure is that all professionals and all parents and caregivers have access to strengthening services, all designed around how can we support children and ensure that all children can thrive. And really, it's around this concept that, we believe that when the people who surround children have the support and resources they need, then children have, children receive the nurturing environments that they deserve. And we're really all working to build up those positive childhood experiences for Ohio's youth.
Nicole, thank you so much for your public service and for sharing a little bit of information about part of Ohio's public infrastructure that some people may not even know about. So I really appreciate you going in depth about what the trust fund is and what the trust fund does. As you probably are aware, April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we're having this conversation early so we can support our listeners in preparing for how they can engage in this campaign for strengthening healthy family environments. The prevention professionals that are listening, and of course, all of our interested and others in our audience know that words and language matter in all aspects of our work. When it comes to preventing child abuse and neglect, there are specific considerations around words and language that help us be most effective. And I picked up on that as you have talked in just the first few minutes of our podcast here. So my question to you is, what is the best approach for talking about child abuse prevention?
I love this question, and I love that we're having this conversation today because we've been talking about this a lot over the past year or two at the Ohio Children's Trust Fund with our board, as well as our national partners. And so as we're thinking about our best approach for talking about child abuse prevention, I think it's important for your listeners to know that we ground all of our work in the Center for the Study of Social Policies, Strengthening Families Protective Factors framework. And we use that framework to talk about our services and supports and how they're designed to better families' lives. You mentioned this in the introduction here, and I think it's important that we all recognize that words carry a lot of weight, and how we talk about our programs to families matters. A lot of times, the families that we're working with, they have a choice in attending our programs. Our programs are voluntary, and our families are not mandated to be there. So if they see that we're describing the service as a child abuse prevention program, they may immediately feel turned off to attending. They might be worried that others will think negatively of them. And they might think, that's not me. I don't need that service. And so how we choose to talk about our services really matters. A lot of times what we do is we look at the outcomes of the programs to describe them when we're talking about them to families. So a lot of our programs, they work to improve things such as family functioning and nurturing and attachment. And these are all outcomes that most families would welcome for themselves. And it's not just for those families who are more at risk to becoming involved with our children's services systems. You know, we know that parenting doesn't come with a manual. And so all families are going to need help at some point in their parenting journey as they navigate different challenges. And so what we really want to use is language that makes all families want to be a part of our funded services.
Thank you so much, Nicole. And as you're talking, it makes me wonder, the role of public health is to prevent lots of things, even from fall prevention to violence prevention to substance use disorder prevention. So what recommendations would you make for the entire public health field who's focusing on prevention for bringing conversations about prevention so it is well received by those individuals who are seeking those types of services?
Yeah, so a lot of the times when we're talking about how to tailor our messaging so that it's inviting for all families, we really start to utilize language such as strengthening families, supporting families. And I think the key thing that we're talking about here is the word families. We want to make sure that it's inclusive of parents, caregivers, and then children themselves. All of those individuals who are in that caretaking role within that family unit. Most parents, they want to do what's right for their kids. And when our language is framed as helping children, it removes the stigma around the parent seeking help due to a deficit on their end. We know that words, they impact our confidence, they impact, you know, who and what we believe we are. And so if we want parents to be confident in raising their kids and overcoming challenges, then we need to be cognizant of the words and the language that we're using with families. And again, I'm going to go back to the Strengthening Families Protective Factors framework. It is all designed around highlighting the parenting strengths and then really thinking through, you know, how do we call out these strengths and recognize what a family and a parent is doing well? But then how do we then support some of those areas that a family or a parent may be struggling with? I heard somewhere that researchers found it takes over 5 positive comments to counterbalance 1 negative comment. And then when you're applying that logic to our work with families who may be experiencing some really complex issues, it's likely a much higher ratio of positive language, positive words that we're using before we start working with them on some of those areas where they may be displaying some risk factors.
Thank you so much. I think by highlighting the work that you're doing in the child abuse and neglect space offers a lot of things for folks in other prevention spaces to noodle on and thinking about how they can utilize those positive thoughts and those positive words to support them in getting the outcomes that they desire. I really appreciate this conversation. When it comes to risk and protective factors, I wonder if it's helpful to understand the intersectionality of parental stress, child well-being, and social determinants of health. And in the spirit of Language Matters, I'm going to take a few minutes to define these concepts for our listeners to make sure that we have a shared understanding of these terms. So parental stress can involve a variety of life stressors on parents or a distinct type of stress that arises when a parent's perception of the demands of parenting flip beyond the resources. When it comes to child well-being, there are multiple ways of assessing child well-being, such as health, education, economic status, family or social life, or safety and security concerns. And finally, social determinants of health are the conditions or circumstances in which individuals live that may have a positive or negative impact on health. So at the beginning, let's just kind of start at the root. What are the protective factors for child well-being?
Yes, when we talk about protective factors, we're typically talking about them through the lens of the parent. And these ones that we highlight are parental resilience, social connections, knowledge of parenting and child development, concrete support in times of need, and social and emotional competence of children. And those are the ones that are really at the heart of the Strengthening Families Protective Factors framework. But as you may notice, if you're familiar with these concepts, there's only one that is directly related to the child. That's the social and emotional competence of children protective factor. So as we think through protective factors for child well-being, we're focusing most explicitly on, you know, what are those positive influences that prepare children to succeed socially and emotionally. Over the past couple of years, we've been doing a lot at the Trust Fund as part of our April Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month activities to really elevate awareness of positive childhood experiences, which is really what we're talking about when we talk about child well-being protective factors. And these are things such as a child being able to talk with their family about their feelings, feeling that their family stood by them during difficult times. There are community and school-related protective factors. So enjoying participating in community traditions, feeling a sense of belonging in high school, feeling supported by friends, having at least two non-parent adults who took a genuine interest in them, and then feeling safe and protected by an adult in their home. And as you can see, these protective factors, while they're directed, for children and youth, parents, caregivers, teachers, coaches, all of those adults in their life play a pretty big role in developing these protective factors of child well-being for children and youth.
Thank you so much for that description of the protective factors. And I'm hoping that you can extend those protective factors and talk a little bit about what protective factors influence parental stress.
So from a parent standpoint, parental resilience is the protective factor most associated with parental stress. And resilience has to do with the emotional well-being of the parent and the parent's ability to bounce back when a challenge arises. A resilient parent is one who can encounter stress or a stumbling block, but they know that they're capable of handling it. They're able to solve their problems and they're able to continue moving forward. And it's really having the ability to remain hopeful and positive, which is really the foundation of resiliency. And so when parents themselves can stay calm, they can stay positive when they're facing a challenge, they are then modeling that behavior for their child. And then their children may also learn these qualities and learn how to become resilient themselves. And with that said, I just want to call out, while that is the protective factor that really has that most direct connection to parental stress, there's a connection amongst all child and parent protective factors. Anytime that we are improving these factors, we're building up the parent's confidence. If they're struggling with knowledge of parenting, once we are able to help support them and build up their knowledge, that anxiety or the stress they had in overcoming that challenge, it's lessened. And so really, building up all protective factors is going to have an influence on supporting parents and decreasing parental stress.
Thank you so much for you just taking the time to show the connection between child well-being and resiliency in parents. I think that is really a cyclical factor that we see, is that one feeds off of one another. And that's something that I know I didn't really think about until this conversation. And so you highlighting it really has me thinking about that concept as well. We're going to take a moment though and focus on some of those risk factors. What are the risk factors that you see that are most commonly impacting a child's well?
So a combination of individual relationship and community and societal factors, these all can contribute to negative child well-being, really those risk factors that we're talking about. And some of the more critical ones that we're seeing are things such as domestic violence, child maltreatment, substance misuse disorder, mental health concerns, family dysfunction, community violence. And the list really could go on and on. And for those who are familiar, a lot of these are outlined within what we know as adverse childhood experiences. And so those are really the common risk factors that we're seeing today. I think it's important to call out some of the risk factors that we're also seeing related to social media concerns and some of those negative impacts as it relates to children and youth mental health and anxiety.
As you listed off some of those risk factors, I was also seeing some of those risk factors could also impact parental stress. In addition to those, what are some other things that you see that impact parental stress?
Yeah, from a parent standpoint, when we're thinking through risk factors, these can include things such as lack of employment, underemployment, challenges relating to, meeting the basic needs for the family, Some of these are still just the everyday demands of parenting. Sometimes that everyday parenting struggle can be very stressful on families, but things such as health concerns, behavioral challenges with their children, children who may have a developmental disability or a delay. So I think that there are lots of things that can elevate parental stress from a risk factor standpoint. But also, I just always want to call attention to where our protective factors come into play. And a lot of those protective factors have those direct linkages to these risk factors. So thinking through concrete supports in times of need, that really is designed around building up a family safety net, helping to offset some of the challenges related to accessing basic needs. Same with social connections. Parents can feel, parenting can be very isolating at times, and especially for new parents. And so every time that we're supporting these protective factors, we're then mitigating some of those risk factors and the direct linkage to parental stress.
Yeah, Nicole, as you were talking, it brought me right back to when I was in graduate school in the late 90s. I volunteered at a respite center where parents could drop their children off if they needed some time to sort of reset and recharge and then, and get access to those resources. And then during one of the trainings, one of the facilitators said, you know, hearing about that time span that we call the terrible twos, but I really wish we wouldn't call it the terrible twos, because that's a time where we see really heightened, situations of childhood abuse or neglect. And what she reminded all of us who were sitting in that training, most of us who were not parents at the time, that it's having that social support where if your child is exhibiting a behavior and you have that ability to call your own parent or call a friend or have someone talk with you about it, that is going to be your key. And for the parents who are dropping their children off, they may have nobody there. They just need that time. And I think looking back, they were trying to be sure that we didn't come from a place of judgment, but be coming from a place of thinking about what has happened to this person and has brought them to the point where they need respite from their child. And so that kind of brings me to my next question about social determinants of health. And so reflecting on the risk and protective factors that impact children and parents, how do these factors connect to social determinants of health?
Yeah, so as you talked about previously, those social determinants of health, those are really those non-medical factors and conditions that are influencing our health outcomes. And so when we think through our protective factors and this direct linkage to social determinants of health, we can see in some instances a near one-to-one connection between the two. So for example, economic stability, that connects directly to improvements in concrete supports in times of needs. And as families, as they're able to build up their economic stability, they're lessening their parental stress, and they've built up their resilience to that challenge and improved, you know, maybe their access to community supports. Maybe they were able to get connected to a food pantry or some sort of other financial resources. Similarly, related to social and community context, that connects one-to-one with social connections for that protective factor. And so that's really thinking through, you know, how do we build up those relationships between a parent and their other family members, their friends, their coworkers? It's really around building up that strong social and community connection. And that's in and of itself, like I keep saying, a protective factor. And so I think it's just, you know, really connecting the dots between those social determinants of health that we're seeing at the community society level, but then kind of mapping out how they directly relate to the protective factors, because they do in many situations.
I wonder if you can connect the dots even one step further for our listeners. How can our understanding of how social determinants of health impact child well-being and parental stress help us identify priority populations to serve?
Yeah, so if we know that a population has risk factors that may be created by geography, economic status, or social and cultural norms, It offers the opportunity to create resources, programs, services that are able to directly reach that population and mitigate against those negative impacts. I'm thinking through some of the programs that we're supporting right now in Appalachia, Ohio, or in our rural areas. And so as we design our programs, we also are then offering parents either, you know, gas cards or other transportation means, because transportation is a significant barrier in families receiving those services. Thinking through areas that are childcare deserts, how do we offer then childcare so that families are able to participate in our programs? But another important thing here is also looking broadly at social determinants of health and protective factors, and really thinking through prioritization from a public health approach versus targeting individual families. If we kind of go back to the very beginning of our conversation, we want to ensure that we're normalizing help-seeking behaviors and access to family-supportive services. And so to do that, we want to lessen the stigma in accessing services. So it gets back to the, you know, not just targeting specific communities, targeting specific families, but really kind of broadening our understanding of the services that we want to offer so that all families can see the value in opting into family strengthening and supportive services.
Absolutely. And we know that one goal of prevention is to encourage protective factors and to ameliorate risk factors for everyone. So what strategies exist to mitigate parental stress, either by encouraging protective factors or reducing risk factors?
At the Ohio Children's Trust Fund, we offer a variety of programs and services aimed at helping to reinforce or build up protective factors. And our array of programs and services is as diverse as the population in Ohio. I'm just going to rattle off a couple different programs, but these are not, it's not a finite list. So some things that we support are programs such as parent cafes. And these are really a way for parents to make those social connections and to have discussions about parenting topics in a non-judgmental, welcoming environment. In parent cafes, these cafes are conducted with a parent host. And so it really is parents talking to other parents about, you know, challenges that they're experiencing with their kiddos. You know, asking parents, hey, when you encountered this, what did you do to get help? So really building up parents' confidence to show that they do have strength, they have knowledge, and they can actually help other parents who may be encountering similar issues. Another program is the Triple P Positive Parenting Program. Currently, Ohio is offering this program free to any parent and caregiver throughout the state. It's the online version of the program. And so if you Google Triple P Ohio, you'll get connected to the state's website. But really, this program is all around building up those positive parenting practices, helping parents build up their confidence as they're encountering challenging child behavior. Some other things that we support are youth mentoring programs. These are really a wonderful way to help build confidence in children and create a positive impact, getting back to specifically social and emotional development and competence of children themselves. And then we also have a new model that we've been piloting called the Family Success Network. And this is really a program designed around having a family coach who is going to work with individual families, help identify some need that the family may want to work on, and then building connections to concrete supports, financial management, you know, parenting support, whatever the family needs, that's what this program is designed to help them with. But outside of what we're specifically funding at the Ohio Children's Trust Fund, there are lots of strategies all throughout the state. These could be programs supported by the Department of Children and Youth, but also programs through other agencies and then local programs or other federal programs. And so these are initiatives such as, you know, home visiting programs, helping parents when they're bringing home a new baby. Childcare is a primary prevention strategy. Any sort of, you know, crisis care line, helpline, information and referral. The list can really go on and on. There are a ton of services and supports throughout the state right now, really designed to strengthening those protective factors while reducing those risk factors.
Absolutely. Ohio is so rich with support. And I know one that really helped my family was helped me grow. When our youngest son was born, he had epilepsy, and it took us a long time to figure out what exactly that was and what it meant for our family. And having that support and parenting support and, you know, a guide or someone to help me navigate the medical system was exactly what I needed at the right time. So thinking about resources and support that are available for children and families, where can our listeners find those if they wanted to access them locally?
Yeah, so I have to do a little self-promotion here. The Ohio Children's Trust Fund has a robust website. Parents and providers can visit us at octf.ohio.gov. And we have programs related to a whole assortment of parenting needs. The Triple P website can be accessed from our website, Family Success Network, Parent Cafes. So I definitely encourage folks to check us out. But the new Department of Children and Youth also has a lot of resources and supports for families. And it can be accessed at childrenandyouth.ohio.gov. Another resource that I want to leave you all with is the Dolly Parton Imagination Library at ohioimaginationlibrary.org. We didn't really talk a lot about this, but this really is a wonderful resource providing free books to families with children up to age 5. And so, you know, making these connections for parents, you know, to read to their young children is also supporting that nurturing and attachment, getting back to that protective factor. I still wanted to make sure that your listeners knew about that resource as well.
Thank you so much. And a lot of our listeners out there tune in to our podcast as professional development. So what professional development opportunities do you recommend prevention professionals and interested elders explore to educate themselves on strengthening families and protective factors?
There are many opportunities for professionals to be educated on this topic for strengthening families and protective factors. One free resource is the Friends National Resource Center. And I mentioned maybe earlier in the call, they're the technical assistance provider for our community-based child abuse prevention grant. And they have an entire free online course catalog with trainings and resources. And they have one specifically for the Strengthening Families Protective Factors Framework. They also have free online modules related to building community connections, as well as building collaboration between practitioners and parents themselves. There's a lot of emphasis on, you know, bringing the voice of parents to the conversation as we're talking about designing our services and systems. And they really have some great resources on that topic. The Center for the Study of Social Policy also has a robust website with many resources to educate oneself on these topics. And again, the Ohio Children's Trust Fund. In addition to having parenting resources, we also have resources for professionals tab on our website. And we host numerous trainings throughout the year. So if any interested professionals are out there, you can reach us directly at octf at octf.ohio.gov.
Cool. Thank you so much. And before we get to the place where we need to kind of park this van and end our conversation, I wanted to remind all of our listeners out there that our show notes will have links to all of the resources that Nicole mentioned throughout the podcast. So if you're listening as you're on a walk, taking care of yourself, or you're listening driving your own children from place to place where they need to be, you don't need to worry about taking notes on those resources. You can find them in the show notes where our amazing team has already curated that list for you. So it's that time, Nicole, where we wrap up our conversation. And when we do that, we ask our guests a few rapid-fire questions to close. So I know that this weekend is the time change already. So my question for you is, would you rather spring forward or fall back?
I am definitely a fall back person. Fall back is always on my birthday weekend. And so I always get that extra hour on my birthday.
That is amazing, right? What a gift. The work that we've talked about today really demands resiliency, not only, from ourselves as professionals, but also from those who are parents or from those of us who are working with parents. So my next question has to do with a wellness strategy. Would you rather leave a kind note for someone or engage in a mindful breathing exercise?
I like kind notes. That's something that I practice for my team and for others within my family. And I think taking the time to write out a meaningful sentiment for somebody, I know it means a lot to me, so I try to pass that on to others as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. This last question we ask all of our guests. So you are reaching into that bowl of M&Ms. Are you searching for one that's plain or peanut?
Plain. That was easy.
Thank you so much, Nicole, for sharing your time, your experience, and your expertise with us. Thank you to our listeners for joining the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion podcast, Prioritizing Prevention. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or set the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. To catch all the latest from the Center of Excellence, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.pyden.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services. And for more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.